Of Parliament from the strike position of the industry on mineral resources, specifically people from the Chamber of Mines, your dear friends, the MPG. I know you are very good friends. You don't come and find yourself in this committee. You all can find it at any given moment. But it's nice to bring you today under one roof. The learned friends, they call it, they always say, my lord. Those that represent the ex-mine workers, our dear friends, people that I always say, you can pick up any fight, there is only one that I can guarantee you, you will never win it. Our media threatening. There is one battle I always say, I'm never prepared to fight that. They can write, they can say whatever they say. It's their right to say so. So whatever they write, just accept it. Once you try to pick up that fight, it's one fight you will never win. Not in a bad way, I always say they can take you up, and the way you come down it will be similar to how they shoot you up. So you must just remain friendly. Even if you don't like it, just accept it. It is like that. The staff of the committee, this is our last meeting for 2017. I can declare that I meet with the deputy minister in many areas. I said I'm looking forward to 2018. At least by 2018, I'm sure I will know who are my true friends. Who are my true comrades and who are my true colleagues. I hope all of us will still be sitting here in 2018, hopefully end of January, February, as colleagues and comrades. It is a known fact that this has been a year that has been quite a hectic one, especially for the industry. And I'm hopeful that when you are under this roof, we will have a better year in 2018 and a much more improved relationship. We really need each other. We have to cooperate with each other. We have to do things that we don't necessarily like doing, but for the sake of the country and its people, we have to make 2018 a better year than it is. We are here to try and finalize two issues that remain outstanding. I won't continue, Honorable Matala, because the reason I was taking this time, I didn't want to start the meeting before you could come to me. So, as an elderly, respectful, I will wait for you. Let me also apologize. I know the venue is quite squeezed. And myself, I've got such a heavy last time, which is last week, it was Mr. Chapter, who flew and asked for medication from me. Now, next time, I will know when someone is flu, when he's asking for medication, it's a symptom. Thanks to the Department of Health that is here, I told the Dr. Nicole that I don't need a PhD holder. I need a medical doctor. with PhD holes is not going to help me. I'm not doing research, I'm sick. So you'll have, will accept my condition, I hopefully. The first issue that I think we have to dispense with is that we're agreed, and I think we gave notice last week that yesterday we were supposed to deal with the issue of the questions that we were supposed to finalize with the minister on the issue of the instructions given to us by the house chair, and that is the opportunity that we first have to dispense with that matter. And then we will then deal with the second issue that we couldn't be able to deal with questions and other issues, because there were issues of political clarity that we needed before we could deal with the issues in the presentation. But before I do that, are there any apologies?
Good morning to honorable members and the guests. I've got apologies from the Senior Minister. Sorry, in Gosu Mandela.
I saw how Chris I was looking at you. Okay. Honorable members, I think the second, the issue then that we are going to start with, and I must say the reason of to start with, I don't think we okay. We were asked from the legal services that they must also have someone if and as and when we might need the advice, that person must be here. So we have to deal with the first issue. Yesterday we were supposed to deal with the questions to the minister so that we finalize them, and we had planned that if time permits, we were going to then ask the committee to then deal with the way forward. In the event we're not going to do that on time, we're going to then deal with the way forward today, dedicate an hour, so that we deal with the issue of the way forward. I can say when we received, which I think is not for me to read, the message from the minister, this one I take blame if it, there is any, because the minister had declared his non-availability, obviously with reasons, I had to take a decision that we can't continue with the meeting yesterday. There is something called, is it wasteful and fruitless expenditure? Someone once asked, what were you eating, so much fruit? And on that note, we felt that we should call off the meeting yesterday and then deal with the issue today. So we will be dealing with that matter first, and then we will go to finalize the issue of our last week's meeting that we couldn't conclude. Can we get the reasons from the minister, and then the committee members will deal with the issue?
Members, the minister's office has sent a correspondence saying that the minister is not yet recovered, he's still sick, hence the meeting was cancelled yesterday. Thank you.
That's the platform is for you. I don't want to take my 25 minutes. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's very unfortunate that the minister is not here, could not make it yesterday. I think it's also the oldest trick in the book is to say that you're ill. So I'm not sure that I totally accept that apology. But may I suggest, Mr. Chair, that we determine a date, 2 weeks' time, and ask the minister if he can be there, or if he can be here rather. And if he can't, then to approach the speaker for a letter and or subpoena ordering to appear before the committee, because I think we heard the matter about a month before, it was about 3-4 weeks, and we deliberately asked him for the date. I think it was the 28th was in fact the date he chose. So maybe you should go back and ask for a date within the next 2 weeks. If you can't, well, then approach the Speaker for a date which he's compelled to appear before the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will suggest to the committee that we accept the apology of the minister, and then I will differ with Honourable Smith, because if a person has not yet recovered, we don't know when he's going to recover. So we might set a date after that. Maybe it's not okay, because no one wants to get sick. And we know that the minister has been appearing before the committee, and he has shown the willingness to appear before the committee. So I think if we set a date, and maybe he don't recover by that time, so let's wait and see when he recovers so that we can set the date after. Thank you.
Anyway, you want me to speak, Chair? You will not.
No,
I will speak anyway after
no.
I leave the board. Yes.
No,
thank
no,
you
no,
very
no.
much.
Wait, I was just asking. I thought you end on.
One
does not ask. You want me to speak.
Keep it down. Keep it down like that. I do.
Thanks, Chair. No, I just wanted to second Honorable Mofolo, especially that the date for yesterday came from the minister himself, and that we give him maybe the second chance, even if that means giving him the long rope to hem himself, that he must go.
Thank you very much. Mine, I think I had to crown the two proposals. I think the important thing is to have the meeting must take place. That's what is important. And therefore, we have no other choice, Chair. I think we'll have to have this meeting. But the unfortunate part that it's the last day tomorrow to be around here, so we'll be going home. So automatically, let's really give to our chair and the whip to make sure that there will be a meeting. And then in that meeting that we'll be having when we come back, so they will give us a date and time we are going to meet with the minister. I think let's do that so that we're able to move forward together, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
The first thing is that even last time I said that, the first thing is that you told the people that you are people, what you call it. Thank you, Chair.
Hold on. I wouldn't say what happens in Limpopo that my mic, I press it on and then you look at me, then it goes off. But it's okay. The first problem is that we are sitting with, I'm not second guessing, we are sitting with a notice of sick leave, which I think we've got no option but to accept. The second thing is, that's why I said I must be practical. Honorable Schmidt says in 2 weeks' time we must have the meeting and the minister must confirm his availability. This is, we are on the 29th, so 2 weeks' time surely would mean 13, and so that confirmation can take us to the 20th if we work according to the dates that we have. Now, I know this may sound very insensitive, but it's a fact. Is that I doubt we'll get these members from the ANC during that period. I just want to be honest, to tell them that on the 16th they should not be Nasrak. It's going to be a huge task for them. Can't we make a compromise position to say, what do we do? To say, in noting the apology from the minister, and in accepting the sick note, and in understanding the process, is it a good word to use, of rehabilitation, whatever you call it, between now, that on the first working week of January, we then give the minister a date, and then we alternatively, he then, if he has got a problem with that date, gives us an alternative date. But we're the ones who give him an old date, and then if he feels that that date, for whatever reason, I don't want to know what are the reasons, he then gives us an alternative date, and then it becomes our first issue when we come back from recess. I think we come back on January. There's something that is called, what is it in the program, training of members. We can then, because of the agency of the matter, ask a day, if it is a Wednesday, that day, to say we request, because that issue can take us about 2 to 3 hours. And then as for that day, we deal with the matter, and then we then say what becomes the way forward. I'm just trying to say what could be the best option. Honorable Pikini.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm sure that your proposal, Chair, it covers all of us in this house, and it's going to assist us in going forward, Chair. I think I wish to second it, Chair. Thank you very much.
Any second?
Huh? Oh. Okay. Any objection? Honorable Bushman?
Mr. Chair, can I just place on record? Mr. Chair, if the minister does not appear at the next proposed date, what's the committee going to do then? Asking for another postponement?
That's why I said, if the minister, the date that we are giving, does have a problem with it, we'll have to give us an alternative date. And it is for this committee also to see whether that alternative date is reasonable enough to give us an opportunity. That's first point. Can I make it a proposal instead of what of a question? And say the committee, in the event the minister is not giving us a definite answer, will then have to take a decision on the way forward. Can't we deal with that in that question? Rather than to make it a question and just say, as and when that date is determined, if the minister does not appear, the committee will have to take a decision on what then becomes the way forward. Will that cover you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, very reluctantly so.
No, the reason I'm saying that is that for now we didn't expect the sick note. But the reality is that, and I think I will agree with members, we can't just sit on one issue. At some point, we must make a definite decision. And I'm saying, surely on that date, if any other matter happens, then as a committee, we will then have to take a decision on what is the way forward. For an example, I don't want to preempt again, we will have to take a decision. Does that suggest that nothing more the committee can do except besides the questions to the minister? We'll have to answer that question at that meeting. Is that okay, Honorable?
Yes, Mr. Chair, except that there is one alternative, and I think we all know what the alternative is, and that the speaker summon the minister to the committee. Now, and that's the suggestion, our proposal I will make at the next meeting, should the minister not be here.
Okay, another beginning.
Thank you very much. I think all of us, we want to address this matter once and for all. And therefore, we will do in whatever in our power to make it a point that that meeting continue in the beginning of next year. So I'm with you, Honorable. Where all of us, I think, were saying in one voice that we will do whatever in our power to make sure that the minister come in account in this particular meeting. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, can I make this proposal? I said that I don't have the program here to say we, the committee, if it mandates us, we will write to the minister and give him a date of the first days when Parliament comes back from recess, which is in January. I think we will check when our thing is that period of that week of the training. We'll give the minister the date.
Oh, do you have it? Yes.
Where is it? Okay. There is NA members training 23 to 26 January. So during that period, we will then have to check when is the... We want to make it easy even for you. Okay. 23, there's 24 Wednesday. We will give the minister the 24th of January. And then, on that day, if then the minister is not available, doesn't show, and probably with an alternative, obviously we can't go to March. I think we are reasonable enough. We can't go to March. Maybe if he gives us, he can give us the following week. But subject to that, on that day, we will then come sit here as a committee and deal with the issue that I think Honorable Schmidt is talking about, the subpoena that she's talking about, but also in addition to that, we will then take a decision on what is the way forward in the meantime. I think for me, I don't want us to be either or. It's just a process that at the same time goes, whether the committee can continue simply because it is not final. We'll have to have that discussion. Mm. But on the other side, the proposals that Honorable Schmidt is coming, it will still be open and it will be made in that meeting, and then we'll deal with it at that stage. Can we leave it at that? So with the date is the 24th January, and the letter will be sent now. And then subject to that, what we can do, Honorable Members, even if it's during the festive period, so that I don't have your numbers, we can do a round-robin and say, this is the response. If the minister says it's not available, it's available on this date, we will then deal with the issue. But second, I think we will write not a report, and I must say, I do interact with the House Chair. We will also indicate to the House Chair what is the decision of the committee and how it's going to take the matter forward. And then we will then be here. If there is a response contrary, we will give you notice again in advance, in relation to the 24th of January. Can we leave it at that at this stage? Okay. Thank you very much. At least being sick is human. Then we go to the next issue. We had presentations from the lawyers that are representing ex-mine workers. On the class action, we also had a response from the working group, IBO. If it happens to a chairperson, it's just a warning. It's just a warning for everyone.
The chairperson contributes to the holiday fund, Mr. Chair.
Sorry about that. I'm one of the first people when I'm in the meeting who switches off the phone. Okay. So, out of all the presentations, then there was the issue of the department with regards to the... What's happening now? Okay. So there was an issue then, what is the attitude and the role of the department in trying to deal with the situation with regards to the class action that has been taken? We also agreed that we're not going to deal with the merits and demerits of the cases amongst the parties, but we needed to get clarity whether the department has played any role in terms of dealing with the situation. Does it intend to play any particular role? Lastly was the question of the compensation funds. In terms of the political direction, what is it that the department, through the ministry and the ministries or departments? So we then agreed, out of passion, that we know the deputy minister is very passionate about the issues that relates to ex-mine workers, that we will need him to be here for the sake of political accountability to just take us through that process. So thanks, DM, for honoring the call by the committee. So we'll leave the matter to you so that then we can deal with all the questions in relation to what members wanted to raise last time. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Dr. Kishna Sami also prepared a presentation, and I think we're going to listen to his presentation as well.
If he wants so, but to the best of my knowledge, we only asked for the slides because when he made that presentation, it was not contained in a documentary form. But we can still give him a second bite if it needs to be. But I think most importantly, we needed the department for political reasons. But we will see. Can we first give the deputy minister? Of my line.
Thank you, Chair. Before the minister.
Deputy minister.
Before the deputy minister. I'm used to ministers. I'm sorry, Chair. Sorry. I had a presentation here from Dr. Barry. And when you check on it, it's written update to portfolio committee on planning, monetary and evaluation. Is this thing only presented to the portfolio committee on mineral resources, or is it for the other department? Because in my view, Chair, you must do the right thing. If you come with a presentation like this to this committee, it must be written the name of the committee, because this thing is going to the archives of the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, so that the next generation cannot be misled by what was discussed by the previous committees of Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. So to me, even if it has got some other related issues of mining, but the front page of this presentation must be written the Portfolio Committee of Mineral Resources. not the planning and monitoring and evaluation. We are not that department. Given the context is for this committee on mineral resources, but this page, the front one, must be written mineral resources, not this one. Thank you very much. Can I get the clarity? Thank you.
Can we deal with the DM first and then we will deal with the presentations later? Dr. Kisinsami knows very well we have not yet agreed on the presentation. I remember what honorable members said was that when he made that presentation, they requested, can we please get what you presented? It sounded very well, quite good, but unfortunately we don't have the information. So I thought the information in front of you is for consumption purposes. Honorable Schmidt then says, because my problem is that I fear something that then others will also come and say, but can we also be given an opportunity to add to what we have said last time when we were making it? So can we first, because what the decision was about the political office. What is the political guidance on the issues that we're dealing with so that we can be able then to ask questions on all the affected parties? Then there was the working group. There were the two or four lawyer group. That was Richard Spoor. What is the other one?
Charles Abraham.
Yes, Charles. Then there was a legal resource center. Né? And then there was Tulu and Partners. Those were the side of the lawyers. Then you had the working group, and also in addition, there was something from the Chamber of Mines. And then there was the government presentation on the compensation system, which was the Department of Mineral Resources, as well as the Department of Health through the Compensation Commissioner. And then we then needed to ask questions. Then there was for the lack of a better word, the need for a political clarity on the issues so that members can then engage. Can we deal with that issue in that fashion? Because the Deputy Minister is here, and before he puts an apology, we must have dealt with the matter now. Can you allow the Deputy Minister? DM?
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. Yes, Zogar. Andre. Thank you very much for the opportunity. May I also thank the honorable members for the invitation just to share some perspectives. I know that this meeting has taken about 40 minutes to discuss one matter. I'm just making an observation. But the reason why we are here, as I'm told, was just to give a bit of background. And I hear you talking about passion and so on. But maybe also, as I recognize the guests that are here, the Department of Health, Department of Labor, colleagues from the Department of Mineral Resources, the legal fraternity that is here, the Chamber of Mines as well, the Gold Group, and all other ex-mine workers associations that are here, and social partners. This program that we're talking about is only just about South Africa. It goes into other borders as well, especially Lesotho, Mozambique, Swaziland, and Botswana. But you would know that the matter at hand relating to the class action goes even up to London, as the legal people were saying yesterday. Now, let me just put this to perspective, that this class action is not the first one. There has been another major class action, and I was present when Mr. Spoor was presenting last week, or yes, that other week, about where we had our paths crossed. Me and him, just because of the Asbestos Relief Trust, where I had certain discomforts, and we did discuss it. I'm not going to get into the details. But I grew up in a mining area. That's why maybe I seem to want to have an approach that is comprehensive. And also worked in the mining industry for some time. I worked for De Beers for about 14 years. So part of my duty is over and above doing engineering work, metallurgy work, accounting and personnel. I also was a full-time shop steward representing workers. So we know that mining is a very good asset for the country. It contributes enormously to the GDP. It builds everything around us. It's either you mine it or you farm it. And the steel frames that are holding these buildings are from mining, the cement and everything else. So mining, in other words, mining is what makes our economy to be able to go forward. So, and we are so well endowed that even though we have mined for 150 years, we're still going to be mining for the next 100 years in this country. So it's not getting, it's not going anywhere. And we, according to the DG here, DG and Tim, why didn't I recognize you next to me, my brother? We're so used to working together that I sometimes don't forget that you are Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources, together with the Chief Inspector of Mines and other colleagues, and so on. You see, we know that in mining there are very good things, etc., that we can mention endlessly. Chair, as we speak, we're talking about 1,700 mines and quarries in this country, big and small, mining over 50 commodities, employing well over 400,000 people, and having a lot of experience, knowledge, skills, etc. So we've got a lot of positives about mining. About mining, we also have very good institutions like MINTEC, our research institution that does a lot of good work. We've got Council for Geoscience as well, that is over 100 years old. So we are a very strong mining country. So with that, we don't doubt. But partly what we are dealing with about here is the bad side of mining. Mining can be and has been very damaging to the environment. Today, this country is sitting with over 6,000 derelict mines that have become the responsibility of the state. It's a huge, huge liability. And that's why we've got to continue to be strict as we go forward to say that environmental issues must be taken care of. But most importantly, mining has left also a lot of sick people in this country. Sick, exploited, forgotten, and some of them are dead. That's where we feel very strongly about. And we appreciate that society has come converged around this matter. We also appreciate that the legal fraternity has taken this thing to go forward. Where our paths cross with the legal fraternity sometimes is where they also mine the mine workers. Where we go and get all these settlements, and after that we forget about people that have gotten us to get all this money, we take our cut and disappear. Mine workers, if you go to Kuruman, if you go to many other areas where there was asbestos, some of them have died without receiving a cent, without any medical care. The lawyers and the doctors are making a lot of money. So I want to put it on record for this committee to study some of the class action cases, including the Asbestos Relief Trust, and check what impact it has made, who have been the beneficiaries. Because I'm putting this as a warning to say this class action, we cannot stand by and not watch. We're waiting for the courts to do what they have to do because it's still in the courts, we can't discuss the merits, but we should learn from past mistakes. Because not only those who are on the table, the lawyers who are here, who I think their intentions are noble, there are those who have been actually just exploiting people. They register them to say that we're going to get your money, etc., etc. The same things with the accident fund, road accident fund, etc. And some of them just take every month money from workers. Some of them have been arrested, actually. Not only the lawyers. When these programs that we're doing came to the fore, other people as well, chance takers, ngabutsotsi, filling in forms for people taking money. So we have been able, in the past 4 years, and I'll tell you why 4 years, We've tried to stabilize this matter, and I think it's reasonably stable now. So I'm just warning on the issues of those who are exploiting people who are vulnerable, people who don't have the education and the knowledge, promising the money, and the money end up in their own pockets. So that wording must be very clear. And as this committee, I think it's a matter where you've got to dig deeper into this, and not just to say what is the department doing, what is Parliament doing? Because these matters have been raised with Parliament before. But then, here we are. In 2013, we called by the presidency, and I think Dr. Krishnasamy has made that point, to say there's a problem. All the time you have buses and taxis of people coming to sleep at the union building. They want what they call surpluses, their monies, etc. Because what is the truth? The truth is that there are billions of unclaimed benefits in the stable of the FSB, Financial Services Board, pensions, provident funds, and other schemes that they had, including in the Department of Health. In the Department of Health, I think it's well over 3 billion. Now, the Deputy President then, Mr. Khalifa Mutlante, said to the Department of Labor, to the Department of Mineral Resources, and the Department of Health, Dr. Motsoaledi, Minister Shabangu, and then Minister of Labor, Oliphant, we want a solution, and they gave us a year to find a solution in this matter. Because at the time, you had people from the Eastern Cape who had money, names, surnames, but we couldn't find them. The list was about 12,000. Fast forward, within a year, we were able to reduce the number, because some people died in the process, to 4,000 that we could not find. Now, in that year, we started to build the first clinic, special clinic, because if you work in the mines, it can take you up to 20 years to just see that you've developed silicosis or something else. So that was the problem. We knew about the asbestos case, the silicosis cases before, and. So you needed a one-stop service center for ex-mine workers. That's where we started. As I pause there, let me just tell you what progress we've made. And this progress will report, because I'm handing over this program to its owners next week on the 6th. On the 6th, we're opening the last of the pilots. When we decided the pilot clinics, we decided on 4. One for Mutata, one for Carletonville, one for Burgersfort, and one for Kuruman. So the Kuruman one, the Deputy President, Mr. Ramaphosa, will be opening next week, Tuesday, in Kuruman. And the report you'll get is that we started in 2013 with a lot of problems. Today we're handing over the last pilot so that from here the Department of Health can decide how they're going to work going forward. We started with a zero database. Dr. Berry did tell you about the 32 rooms full of files and so on. Thanks to the Chamber of Mines, to the Gold Group and others, Global Funds and all the other social partners, we've been working with us in this program. Because from government, in terms of funding this program, the answer is zilch. We've been successful in this program because we've been raising funds, we've been getting contributions from the mining industry, we've been getting money from the Mine Health and Safety Council, and also the MQA. That's how we succeeded in this program. But there is no dedicated funding from the Department of Mineral Resources, Department of Health, or Department of Labor in this program. But we are glad to say that starting with no database of note, Dr. Krishnasamy told you that we've got anything between 600,000 and 700,000 now of the database of ex-mine workers, which is both in South Africa and outside the country. If you take all those and the over 400, you can talk over 1 million of people that at least we know. How does that help us? This helps us to continuously update their records and ensure that they get what is due to them. What is due to them? One, unclaimed benefits. In the 45 billion rands of unclaimed benefits, the mine workers have about 15 billion, both in the Department of Health about whatever it is, and the FSB. Now, what became good as we were putting all these files into electronic files, out of 200,000 files, we could be able to get 106,000 names that we needed to track and trace. We have in the last financial year been able to pay 7,737 people to the tune of about 218 million. And the states, you can break them down in terms of provinces and how they went and so on. We'd have the numbers for South Africa and the other things. But the clinics, the four clinics, is not only for South Africa. The Global Fund for HIV and AIDS and TB has been able also to help us roll out. One in Botswana, two in Mozambique, two in Swaziland, and two in another country. So that is basically the issues in terms of that. But having thanked the other people who have assisted us in this program, we also had a very huge consultation, which included also the trade unions. National Union of Mine Workers, AMCU, WASA, and Solidarity, to look into the integration process. Because we knew that in 1999, the government took a decision that we must integrate this compensation. But it has been difficult because this thing was, even now, we could not have the get which weighs the head and the tail of it. Thanks to the working group, to Dr. Berry and all the other departments that came to work, so that at least today we can have a semblance of where we are going. So what are the good things about this? The good things are that the integration process, there are proposals on the table. We had a lot of working groups on this to look into the legal issues, the financial issues, and so on and so on, which actually at some stage, the actuaries came with an actuarial report to say that that is what it costs. So Kweda, that you are briefed about, or Dibwa, we left the Department of Labor had the bigger work to do because it was amending Kweda. They have delayed. Dr. Berry did give you, Kisnasami did give you a proposal that says we are looking for a third way. A third way where we consolidate Otimo within the Department of Health and all other new workers go to the Department of Labor. Those who are joining the mining industry at a certain point so that we don't repeat this legacy. They are convinced that if you take whatever the other claims are and what is in the stable, we are able to carry this thing until its conclusion, until it's wrapped up, so that Kweda can be improved to cover everybody else going forward. So that is what is being proposed now. I think politically the Department of Labor and Health have got to agree in terms of the way forward. We are not yet there. What we did after the integration summit, we had workshops and we ended up with a summit that included other countries as well. We handed over the report to the Minister of Labor and the Minister of Health to say, now you take it forward. So from our point, from the task team's point of view, we have done our work there. After handing over this report, these reports, to the Deputy President, who would have given them their work. Also, what we are excited about is that having crisscrossed this country, this program has actually brought together all the stakeholders in the Department of Home Affairs, the Department of Human Settlement, the Department of Mineral Resources, the Department of Health, the Department of Labor, the Department of Social Development, because these are social poverty problems that we're dealing with. So as we move in that. And also, the mining companies have come to the party, the trade unions have come to the party, even though not all of them. But what excites us is that we are able to make a dent into the poverty that is in the country. My last point here, Chair, is that you pay a mine worker, ex-mine worker, 100,000, 120,000, whatever you give them, that money will be finished in 3 months at least. So we have taken lessons from the Eastern Cape, because there we spend a lot of time. There are statistics that how many people are paid and so on, to say what other economic activities can we propose and promote. And in that case, that's how we get to my favorite subject of macadamia plantations in the Eastern Cape. But at that point, when we entered that one, the mine workers had no structure. You had association, you had this, that, and the other. We have encouraged associations across the country and across the borders, but now we have even established a trust, a national trust with interim board members, to be able to help them with economic activities and to be able, for instance, if we go like into those plantations, to be able to have a proper share for them there, so that they can also be able to benefit, including BEEDG. The trust and the business should be able to help them to be able to make inputs into the mining industry at least and others. So that's where we are going, to ensure that we don't just leave people to their own devices, they can have their own. We've made a determination with the farming, with the agricultural sector that has taken over the macadamia now, to roll out in the areas of Limpopo, KZN, Mpumalanga, because that's where they grow, including into the Eastern Cape. This was supported by Department of Rural Development, Water Affairs, Trade and Industry, and so on and so on. As I wrap this up to give an example, for 300 hectares, you employ 300 people. In macadamia, from nursery to harvesting and you're talking 8 years plus. So these are permanent jobs. Our discussions with the farming industry is that there are areas where you can do Northern Cape and here table grapes. Other areas, pomegranates and figs. So we are looking into a rollout of from mining to farming, and those who are from farming to mining as well. So we draw that connection for economic reasons and economic activities. The point that I made earlier about rehabilitation, although it's a legacy, it's an ugly thing, it's also an economic advantage that we have, an opportunity. Just imagine, DG, if we roll out a festival of rehabilitation activities around the country. Our discussion with the Chamber of Mines, and I'm glad Mr. Nisufi is also here, was that in the over 60 billion rands that are in trust, cash deposits, and whatever else, if you just put aside even 10% of that, 6 billion, you are able to have this country working for the next at least 2 to 3 years. So that's where we are going with rehabilitation, and we are starting some pilots in that, and that's where you are also going to load ex-mine workers and other communities to get it. In the farming, it's not ex-mine workers become just a part of it, just part of the communities. In this one, they become the major part, with others as well who can bring, because that is the plan going forward. So I think I should leave it at that, because it was just to say that as government, we are watching very closely, not only the class action, but how we finalize this plight of people who worked in the mines before and who were not able to get what was due to them. You see, there is a last program that the Department of Health is dealing with. You know that the burden of TB incidences is around the mining. That's where the burden is. There are 6 districts in this country where TB is very high. And Dr. Motsoaledi is the chairperson of the Stop Partnership TB program internationally. So mining and the prisons have been where the concentration has been, not only for mine workers, but only for mining communities around there. It's the clinics, the 4 clinics are not enough. We have to be guided into how we go forward, because the miners today are going to be ex-miners tomorrow. So this program is going to continue beyond us. So all we say is that Parliament must support it, not only with words but in action. Comrades and colleagues who are having constituency offices, there is no area that doesn't have a former mine worker. So our meeting with the Financial Services Board that we had last in June was really to say, this database that we have, they must also bring what they have, so that we minimize the tracking and tracing, because everybody is coming here to be able to help, but sometimes the traction is not good. If you're looking for 106,000 people, and from November to November this year, you will pay only about 8,000. That means the thing is bigger. The program is bigger. The money is there, and the other money, balance of the money, is for teachers, for nurses, for police and other public servants and others. I've refused to enter that space. Somebody must take it up. But in the next 18 months, we must be able to make a dent on this one of former mine workers and current mine workers. We have made a lot of strides. We must just take it to another level. Thank you very much. I think I should leave it at that.
Okay. Honorable members, any take? Honorable Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mafolo, Honorable Beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to start from the back and go to last week's presentations. But Minister, do I understand correctly, and I've seen the figures by Dr. Krishna Sami, that is it 106,000 outstanding claims for mine workers? And I heard a figure, I think, I'm not sure whether I heard the figure correctly last week. Maybe I heard it out of context, but it was something like 3.6 or 3.9 billion rand. I'm not sure whether that 3.9 billion rand referred to the claims or whether it referred to the amounts available for these claims. So basically my second question is, for the 106,000, if that is the correct figure, what is the amount available? You did say it covers, but I'd like figures, you know, then you can see for yourself whether it covers. So what is the amount available? Is there enough amount money available for these claims? That's the first issue. The second issue, from Dr. Krishna Sami's presentation, I do see that he breaks it up into first year, second year, and kind of a five-year term, medium term process. The only problem I have with putting the amended occupational health legislation on the long term, the five-year term, is that as long as the law stands, whoever is responsible, and if I understand correctly, DEMA, the fund is sponsored by levies, that legal obligation continues to exist. So if you want to make the clean cut, which Dr. Krishna Sami refers to in his presentation, one will have to do so in coordination with the repeal of that legislation. And there may be a different answer to that, but that's how I see it. So maybe there's an answer Dr. Krishna Sami can give us. Then, from a presentation given to us in Pretoria, I wasn't there, but I read the minutes of that meeting, there was a mention made by, I think it was MQ of all unions, but MQ made a presentation and said the differentiation between controlled mines, where dust and silica is available, and non-controlled mines creates a problem. And the question basically raised to Dr. Krishna Sami is, what are the problems? Because it seems to me that there may be people falling outside the net. In fact, his part of his presentation was, some mines are controlled mines, some mines are not controlled, and in instances where they're not controlled, they basically just get rid of those people by shipping them back or transferring them back to the different countries or the where they come from. So he seems to indicate that there's a slip-off somewhere along the process. That's on the presentation this morning. Then on Dr. Spoor, and I see one of his assistants are here, his colleagues are here. Let me just get you the question. When a matter, the class action is settled, you know, once you have a court case, you have a precedent. There's a finding, there's a judgment, there's an amount of money paid, you get precedent. Now, if you settle a class action, I would guess the confirmation by the court will create some form of precedent. Am I correct? Or doesn't it qualify as a precedent? What's the legal position? Because the next guy wants to sue someone who's going to look for some legal precedent. How is the precedent in that respect? The other issue, do I understand correctly, I'm not sure to who this question should be posed, but new claimants. So new people, if Dr. Krishna Sami's proposal comes into effect, will automatically come onto the new employees. Let's say they start on day one when the act is in operation. Will come into the quota system, let's say. How are you going to deal with those employees currently? Are you going to transfer the liability of under NDIMWA, which is being run up at the moment, to the fund in future, because they may only lodge a claim in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years' time, we don't know. So those for which legal liability already runs now until, let's make it the 1st of January 2019, is that legal liability going to be transferred onto, let's say, quota? there's a legal liability you need to do something with. Maybe just as some explanation. Sorry, I've got it here somewhere. Strict liability. I see Mr. Spoor said, and he said there's no justification either for the application of the fault principle when it comes to compensation for occupational injuries or diseases. The starting point should be that employers should be held strictly liable for the harm that workers suffer as a result of unhealthy and unsafe working conditions. I understood that there is a strict liability. There's no, maybe I'm wrong, but an equator and a DIMA, there's strict liability as such. Do they differ between a DIMA and a quota? But in essence, I thought there was a measure of strict liability there. Maybe I'm wrong. And then, Mr. Spoor, attorney firm, I think you've stated it, but just for purpose of everyone's understanding, you do not charge fees, not administrative, not reimbursements, no nothing, until that particular settlement has been confirmed by the court. So it's basically contingency fees, am I correct? So there are no fees charged by anyone, by any of the firms, to any of the possible claimants. Thank you. Just want to confirm that. Thank you.
Okay. I'm tempted to work on the barrage of questions. No, there's nothing wrong with it. But I'm tempted to take the minute.
And then come to Honorable Mafolo, because there are about 6 or 7 questions. And then the DM and the learned friends will give the answers, and then we come back to you, Honorable Mafolo, and beginning. Can we do that? DM or Richard Spoor, whoever wants to shoot first.
Let me, Bobosa first. The issue relating to the availability, 3.9 billion, it's the contributions that have been, what is available. And then for the 106,000 people, 1.5 billion was set aside out of the 3.9. In other words, the calculation of 106 came to 1.5 billion. So the money that has been paid, the 219 million, is out of the 1.5 billion. And that is came about after taking 200,000 files, cleaning them up, and finding that actually out of them, over 50% is compensable. That's how people are, you know, we went out and it was called Operation Courier. That is where Dr. Mutswali and the mining industry had a big hand. In terms of legislation, clean break, and it's also related to the transferring of liability. It means that those who are currently under ODIMO stay there. The clean break means that if you start to work in the mining industry as a new person, that means you'll start from quota, so there is no liability transferring. You start there and everything else goes accordingly to those, because the benefits are better, and so on and so on. Obviously, this one needs to be strengthened. I also have a problem, like AMCU, about controlled mines and uncontrolled mines. Dr. Berry can talk to that, but what that means is that only those controlled mines that are making contributions about, I don't have the figure now, but you have people in uncontrolled mines and even contractors who are contracting the same diseases and same everything else, but there is no contribution. We cannot, as a state, say that we cannot intervene. So it's a matter that is one of the grey areas that we found, and to say, as we amend legislation, we must be able to deal with this phenomena as well. So in terms of legislative proposals going forward, it's a matter that I think first there must be some discussions between the principals, so that we can find a way of expediting this, if they agree, first of all, into the concept of a clean break, and so on, that we can expedite this matter going forward. It's a matter of I'm sure the lawyers can answer about precedents. Any court case becomes a precedent. That's what I was saying earlier on. Even we must also not just end there. As this committee, as parliament and government, we must also learn from the pitfalls of previous class actions so that we don't repeat the same mistakes. Let's have a case study on it. Let's get the legal people in your legal advisors here in the committee to look into these things, and also so that you can have a different third party perspective in these matters and be able to guide us properly. The others, maybe I can leave it for the lawyers and Dr. Berry to answer.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, apologies to the committee. I sent three notifications to Ms. Voss, and it was just quite, because we were between two committees, because the oversight committee we're also part of. So I do apologize to honourable members about the front page, and I hope my apology is taken. But it is an official document, and we'll change the front cover. But it does cover the information as required by the Chair last week. So I humbly apologize in terms of the committee, and I do recognize the issues around Hansard. So just in terms of the database, this is an outdated slide, and one of the issues, Chair, that's why we welcomed your convening of this, is we need a closer relationship between DMR, DOL, DOH. And one of the issues being the sharing of information and the sharing of data. It's really been a problem in terms of actually coming to grips. So as Deputy Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister pointed out, there's 1,700 entities currently. But if you carve out that bottom there, I think it's on slide 7 of your document, it actually gives you the list of control of registered entities with the Department of Mineral Resources. So it's about 1,700, and we need to get an updated list, and hopefully out of these deliberations, that relationship will deepen and work through. The carve-out is that there are 495 controlled mines out of that. But the problem with ODIMWA, Occupational Dis- and Mines and Works Act, is it covers mines and works. A works is a smelter, a refinery. You know, like the big ISCO works or whatever it's now, Kumba, you know, the thing. So unfortunately, works are covered under Department of Labor. Mines are covered under Department of Mineral Resources. So these are the complications of how legislation of 100 years ago, and as piecemeal approaches were taken by your previous committees, they never considered the overlapping problems that come about amending legislation and putting it together. So that integration is a very important issue. But just to come back to this issue, then the 495 controlled mines and works means I have an overlap. In this case, I've got the mines, but I don't know the number of works in this country, because the works could be a bigger figure, because that's sitting in the Department of Labor. But the control means that we have an inspectorate function. We actually can inspect. We can actually check on hazards. And the key area is that these are the groups of mines and works that pay us levies. And my qualification on my report, Chair, was the fact that we didn't know the complete list of mines and works, and we didn't know then how much revenue to collect. So I have a disqualification on the basis of revenue, and that's why one of the big problems we had is about how many of these are closed. How many of them, like Aurora is a case in point, it closed down. I was not notified as the commissioner. But, you know, I'm not too sure what happened in a counterpart department in terms of the closure certificate. So one of the issues, that's why we pushed in terms of the convenership amongst your different committees and then the closer working relationship between the two departments to finalize this. So this is a vexing issue as raised by EMCU. Going forward, remember the approach we are taking as the Department of Health, we are not in the social protection business. Social protection is a Department of Labor function in terms of the International Labor Organization Convention. It's just by chance historically that we landed up with this problem. So we are cleaning up our problem, and we want to then look, as Deputy Minister led a very successful committee process, as he pointed out, including the summit last year in May, that we want to hand over, and then we're given some medium-term issues. If Parliament can fast-track this process, we would want that tomorrow. I do have my annual report now for 10-11, 11-12. We want to hand over to National, to the Speaker. So at least we are cleaning up our acts over this thing. So I hope that covers this issue around controlled and non-controlled. But the non-controlled mines and works de facto fall back onto QIDA legislation. Honourable Member is right in a sense that there's been a problem in the past where we've done benefit medical examinations on the mine workers. So any mine worker in this country is entitled to a BME. That's the fallacy of the legislation. But when they need compensation, if they worked in a non-controlled mine, we have to hand over that silicosis case to the Department of Labor. Now, that's been a big bun fight in terms of the issues around Is it Rand Mutual that's now responsible? Is it Department of Labor, Main Fund that's responsible, etc.? And one of the issues, Chair, we would hope that in subsequent meetings, maybe if you continue next year, Rand Mutual needs to come to the party as the party that's dealing with compensation for non-occupational lung diseases. And that's been also a very difficult process in terms of another fragmented delivery system that we haven't been able to work with. They hold $15 billion in the pot in terms of disabilities, amputations, injuries in workers. So I hope I covered that issue around controlled and non-controlled. The clean break, as Deputy Minister has pointed out, it really will not cover any new liability. That's why we said to the Department of Labor, you're not taking any liability. It's a new worker, new exposure, new system, so you don't even have to have any transfers from us. So that's a clean break. And while you're quite right, it actually doesn't need an amendment in our Act, but the unions have been pushing for the fact that they want the provisions of ODUMWA, like these services, because QIDA does not have screening services, post-employment services, post-mortem services, etc. And they were pushing for an amendment in QIDA which says that if we agree to new workers, mine workers going across, they should not lose the benefits from ODUMWA. The problem is those benefits can't go for one class. It also must apply to farm workers who are being spraying pesticides. It must apply to diesel mechanics who are exposed to diesel particulate emissions. QIDA is an injury incident reporting system. It's flawed in a sense that it does not have post-surveillance. Only ODUMWA provides ex-mine workers, like Portfolio Committee Chair when you visited Amtata. So I think that covers the two issues on this thing. And if Parliament can fast-track legislative improvements that we could do, we would appreciate that. But it's dependent on the principle. Definitely we will consolidate ODUMWA within the next financial year. I hope that covered then the two aspects that I had to deal with.
Mr. Chair, good morning. I can address the questions, answer questions addressed to Mr. Spoor. In terms of the precedent set by the litigation, we have a judgment. We got judgment in May last year, which does carry, which is a precedent. And then further, if a settlement is achieved, we will then have to bring an application to court. And that court judgment, whether they find in our favor or not, will also be of precedential value. In terms of the strict liability issue, you're correct. Both ODUMWA and QIDA hold employees strictly liable. I think the point, I'm afraid I haven't spoken to him about this issue specifically, but I think the point he was making is that, yes, strict liability is a principle, but it shouldn't be at the cost. There shouldn't be such a significant discount to mine workers as a result of the strict liability principle. I think that's possibly the point he's trying to make. The benefits are too low at this stage. And then just in terms of the fee, you are correct. We act on contingency and don't charge any fees up front. Thank you.
Chair, I think I've covered the question by the Honourable Member, but to the latter part, if you'll allow me, there were three or four slides on the way forward that you might want to come back to, because that was one of the outputs that you wanted last time, notwithstanding the inputs from the Honourable Deputy Minister. But that depends on how you see the committee going in terms of forward. But I think we've answered the questions by the Honourable Member. All right, Chair, if you're allowing me, then I'll quickly run through this. There is a slide on, which covers that.
When you make that, you are answering the question, so your way forward is part of giving clarity on what was being asked, so that when members ask the questions, they'll also relate to what you are suggesting as a way forward.
Thanks, Chair, for allowing me that privilege. So, Chair, this is slide 15, which covers that issue about the 400,000. Sorry, I just want to point out, and you might be in my laser. So this is, Chair, the ex-mine workers population. The Deputy Minister has really supported us in terms of reaching out. Previously with Deputy President Kalema Motlanthe and himself and the leadership, we really went out to try and find this ex-mine workers grouping. Because of the historical legacy of not having the database, that was a major problem. So we currently are crisscrossing the country. And the most recent is Monday, Deputy Minister, you were in Freyid, and I reaching out to ex-mine workers. This is the current 400,000 mine workers, which are currently in employment, across the 495 controlled mines and works. But there are 500,000 people in the industry, so there's 100,000 that are not covered by my law. So this is the grouping. By 31st March next year will be in our database. I've got my team here with the database, but we won't have time to demonstrate it. But what we are going to give you is to the parliamentarians. We promise you we've got forms that you will sign up on to help us with constituency work, and we'll give you access to our database. In terms of, we'll just demo that in a minute so that you can see how at a constituency office level, if somebody calls you up, how to do that. So it's strictly to parliamentarians for now. If there's other people that might need access, there's a different process to that because we think you have sworn oaths and allegiances.
So follow the
disclosure. Okay. So we have these forms which we'll give you. So this is the 400,000 plus the 600,000. Here's the 400,000 current files in the Medical Bureau. Deputy Minister is quite correct. We inherited really, and that was part of our disclaimer, 30% of the files could never be found. There were problems with fraud and all that stuff. And I've got a photograph of, you know, one of the chaotic rooms that we found with the files. 400,000 Medical Bureau files. If somebody has reached this stage, they are due for the certification process by a panel of doctors headed by Dr. Michali. Dr. Michali, unfortunately, is in the other portfolio committee meeting which is taking place. And here's the CCOD, which is the 200,000 files. Once you've reached this stage of the system, then you have a compensable disease, and that's where we needed the record of service from TEBA, et cetera. So this is the 600,000 database that we have, state-of-the-art, which maybe I should just link up to you so that you can actually see that right now. So Andre is just going to give you that chair while I pass out the forms via the committee secretary. Technology fails us at the wrong time. If it doesn't, let's say, just give this to you. It's frozen. Okay, that's fine. Let me just continue. That thing is frozen. Right. So that's the state of art. It's internet-based. Once we've given you password access, then somebody comes to you and says, I'm Barry Kisnasamy. And we can search by ID number, bureau number, passport number, name, surname, and it'll tell you whether you're due a benefit medical examination or whether you're due a compensation claim. Mr. Lesufi is leading a further grouping in the industry which is dealing with the unclaimed benefits across pension and provident funds. We had a very successful meeting on Monday, which is bringing together the mining fraternity. Overall, mine workers are due about 15 billion rand in unclaimed benefits in Southern Africa. That's pension funds, provident funds, compensation funds, etc. And the basis is our database, which is very important. So there'll be a fourth column which says that you've got another pension fund, etc. And Mr. Lesufi from the Chamber of Mines is leading that initiative. So we appreciate that. So let me quickly move on to the way forward. Oh, sorry. This is a slide of what we inherited in the legacy problems. You know, broken tiles, broken buildings, telephone lines not working, and one room with files, this thing. So, and we've converted that in 5 years to an electronic database, state of the art, and really we can marvel at it with the support of social partners, particularly the Chamber of Mines and the gold mining companies. Okay, so I'm going to go to the way forward, and these are all the services that we provided, and Pongola, etc. We've got a very interesting registration process. The one big issue we've had, Chairperson, is financial services for mine workers. The ex-mine workers are outside a jet store, a credit card account, etc. You don't pick them up in any credit bureau because they're not bankable. How do you get a FICA certificate in a squatter camp? How do you get a FICA certificate in a rural village? So you've had to go through the chief system to say that Barry Kisnasamy is a member of, and then you get a FICA certificate. This model, where we can take the photograph, we can do a map code, is innovative, where we can give you FICA registration. Tomorrow we have a meeting with the Banking Association about innovations that we can do to give FICA registration back to our people through smartphones. And this then gives you the demonstration of that we worked with the partner in terms of this. We wanted to make things very easy for our people. This is not just for South Africans. These are Lesotho, Shashai, etc., etc. So these are the technology tools that we've developed in terms of registration. We've mapped the mines. We've mapped the corridors of how people travel. And we've mapped the thing. So we've mapped the flow of money. If we pay out everybody in the Eastern Cape, what Deputy Minister talked about, unclaimed benefits, that's 250 million will go into the Eastern Cape alone from my fund. Right. If you take collectively Mr. Lesufi's different funds, you're probably looking in the region of a billion going into Eastern Cape. So find the people. We have the money. Give them the money. Make sure they've got banking services. So that's the approach we're taking. And make sure it's the right person we're giving things to. So those are some of the stuff we're working to under the leadership of Deputy Minister of Mineral Resources, who's really been a key supporter of us. I'm just going to quickly go to the in-principle party discussions, because this was one of the issues I touched on last week. So Deputy Minister has pointed out the problems we've had before with previous class action settlements. This is slide 42. Previous class action settlements did not involve government as a party, and that's important because it's the third arm of the judicial system, and they are very important. But because of the problems we had with the Quebec Trust, which was the most recent one, Anglo Gold Ashanti and Anglo American, and the Asbestos Relief Trust, we said this time around we will intervene, and together, Deputy Minister and myself, we had some discussions with both parties. In fact, Deputy Minister convened a meeting where Richard Poor was invited to his office last year in October, and that was very important because I think it acknowledged the role that the litigation lawyers were playing. And based on that discussion, we then moved ahead. So these are the principles that we've had in discussions with both the Chamber Gold Working Group lawyers and this thing. So no parallel system of services and certification, because we had a problem. Quebec Trust set up a clinic for chest x-rays and lung functions one road away from Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital. We've got a one-stop service center at Nelson, which I'll visit it. One road away from there, Quebec Trust went and set up a parallel service. And our people got they got disorganized, and they did not know what was going on, confused, because we are calling on them to come to government, which they believe in, and then here's a private trust calling them and saying, we're going to pay you money, but you must come to our trust. So instead of strengthening a system, we said, let's move forward. So fortunately, we are in the final stages of, hopefully the both parties will agree to this, but that's what we are suggesting is a framework. So no parallel systems, provide support for enhanced service delivery of the government system. And what we said, while this was a failed system, we have recovered the system now. So with the support of the mining industry and social partners. Here's the database, the medical assessments, tracking and tracing, fast tracking of payments. And then we are differentiating. There's about four categories, we are told, because we are not party to the settlement. There are four categories that will probably be in the settlement case. There is a 0 to 10% category, there's a 10 to 40% category, there's a greater than 40% category, and there's a special category. So we are going to retool our system to cover that. So ultimately, once somebody is medically assessed, they'll be certified by our committee, and we'll generate another certificate that goes to the settlement fund, which will be separate, and then they'll pay out an additional amount of money. So that's the approach in terms of the principles, Chair. And then the reforms, which I think you got interested in. You didn't realize that this was such a complex issue, this wider issue around compensation, mine health and safety, occupational health and safety. So this is the reforms to this structure within the Department of Health, because we felt we can only deal with the Department of Health. I can't deal with another department unless we get involved with the involvement of the presidency. And that's where DPME comes in, and we've requested of DPME to facilitate. And if your committee, as the deputy minister did, as the neutral party, could facilitate this would be fantastic, and we'd be open to that in terms of the process. So this is occupational disease, streamlined governance structure, streamlined administration. At this point in time, the way the law is written, only the minister and the director general can do various things. I'm based in Johannesburg. My head office is in Pretoria. So by the time I get my x-ray fixed, it takes 6 months. By the time I get services delivered, if I need to go to Lesotho tomorrow, I've got to get permission from the minister. So I'm the only one that delivers cross-border services by mandate of this law. Ministers of Health normally look after the people and citizens and people who are in a country. This law says that, Minister Motsoaledi, you have to provide services across Southern Africa, Malawi, etc. But there's another law which says if a civil servant travels, he must get permission from the minister to travel abroad. So those are some of the issues. And if there's an emergency tomorrow at Mafeking, I just can't go to that emergency. So those are some of the problems that we wanted to sort out. The levy, this levy is flawed in a sense that the levy only covers income protection. It got externalized to government to provide the cost of medical assessments, the cost of health care, the cost of oxygen, etc. So we said in the amendments that the new levy that we will charge will actually have to cover all of these costs. Then the clean break, which we've covered, which covers new people, as Deputy Minister pointed out. And then we're going to undertake some study visits. Brazil, China, Brazil, Canada, and Australia, which are mining companies. We went with a successful visit 2 years ago, Deputy Minister, with Minister Adebe, to Australia, where we looked at some of the issues facing mining. And how is it that a multinational that operates in South Africa and Australia operates completely differently in terms of how it deals with workers in Australia in coal mining and workers in South Africa in coal mining. And we said that those contradictions should not exist anymore. So these study visits are very important. I don't have funds for your committee, but maybe we should talk about that in outside of this meeting. I'm bound by another committee called Portfolio Committee on Health. But maybe we can discuss that also meeting. So the study visits are very important. We're going to go to the International Labour Organization in Geneva. We're going to go to Canada, Australia, and this thing. These are study visits are going to be in February, March next year. Hopefully, Deputy Minister can lead us. We've long raised with him that he needs to make time for us to go with us on these international visits, partly because of the political leadership in terms of this process. And then scientific workshops. We have major problems. We can't work out where this issue comes from of two yearly medical assessments. Dr. Ndelu told me it's something to do with exposure radiation risk. But each benefit medical examination costs us 1,000 rands. It costs us 1,200 rand in Shoshai, and in Amzimkulu, it'll cost us 1,000 rand in a peri-urban area, and it'll cost us 800 rands in Johannesburg. Now, these are expensive things, and also it's not even looking at the cost of people coming from the foothills of the Drakensberg Mountains to Mafeking, so the costs associated with that. So the scientific issues, we don't know what's happening in terms of risk work and dust exposure levels, and then there's the whole issue about guidelines for services and things like that. So there's some scientific issues we're going to look at. So suggested role, Chair, if you are amenable to it in terms of a busy schedule next year, is the convening of the three portfolio committees. Site 44. And short term, these are some of the things we can do for now. The medium term 2 years is the amended acts, particularly occupational diseases and QIDA, because of this issue around receiving and giving departments. And the long term is one integrated occupational health legislation starts from prevention all the way to compensation and rehabilitation. This is a very unique country which has this very fragmented system with mine health and safety governing mines and occupational health and safety governing everybody else besides the mines. Occupational lung diseases covering one group of people, as my minister says, hearts and lungs, you come to Minister Motsoaledi, heads and arms, you go to Minister Oliphant. I mean, how do workers work through this maze of problems and administrative issues? So we need one occupational health and safety law, and I'm a proponent, unmandated, that it must be under the Department of Labor, and we would support that process. Health would come to the party in terms of technical support in occupational health, but the rest of the stuff should be a social protection system, as with anything else, under the leadership of the Department of Labor. So that's what the agenda should be, going back to the 1999 Cabinet Resolution, of not separating out these various issues. We can have then specialized areas dealing with mining, specialized areas dealing with farming, specialized areas dealing with chemical industry, specialized areas dealing with maritime industry, but it's under one legislative framework, one accounting authority, and one delivery mechanism and put together. So, Chair, that's in simple some of the issues, just to acknowledge that really we would not be where we are in the Department of Health if it wasn't a joint relationship. Although the parties were at war with each other, the Chamber of Mines took us to court in 2010. They lost the case in both the lower and the high court, but we overcame that. And we're saying for the better of our people on the ground, the ex-mine workers and workers in general, how do we put that together? And, of course, history will judge us harshly. 1914, Saul Plaikie talks about the lives and livelihoods of mine workers in 1914. It's now 2017. Hopefully in 2040, in 3014, people will look back on your committee and other committees that made a change to their lives and livelihoods. And this is the sharing of the cake in 1910, Rand Daily Mail, where so part of the issues that came from our act was the issue about Welsh coal miners, etc., because of the seams. And this is a miner saying, please, can we share a bit of the cake? And George Farrer, which I suspect might have been the president of the chamber, I must just go back and see who George Farrer was, says, well, you can get a share, but I think it might cause you indigestion. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the information that we have received. I'm almost covered, but just want to know the time frame for the claim to be processed. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let's really welcome the report. But also, let's really appreciate the role that you have played by making sure that we come together and able to have this information in front of us today, Chair. But my question will be really, which you have dealt with us very nice, you know. Some of the answers have come out in the process. But I think it's important that you to raise them because it might really assist in terms of when you get responses. One, what are the specific steps that have been taken to harmonize the compensation laws on lung diseases and to fast-track a compensation system that functions to the advantage of mine workers? A second one, many workers have died from their diseases since the class action began. Will their widows and families be compensated from their planned trust fund? What will happen if a worker opts out from the settlement? What are the prospects for him getting a better deal? The last one. What are the concrete plans of government to deliver a compensation system that functions to the advantage of mine workers? Those are very straightforward ones. Thank you very much.
Ja, ons kan probeer, voorzitter. Die tijdperk wat ons vat om te betaal, nee, de Zulu man is lost now. No, he's lost. Finished, klaar. Je praat wat? Dat is goed. No, the time frame. It's actually dependent on getting all the information. There's a program where money is looking for people. Rather than money, people looking for money. It's money they're looking for you. Once everything is intact, you put all the information, you get paid. Every week on Friday, I receive information on my cell phone to say so many people have been paid this week. And so much, and per province. So it's an ongoing thing that we report weekly as to the payment system and so on. So the time frame is actually all the payments are overdue. This is money owed to people. So that's basically that in terms of time frames. The limit holding the claims. No, this is my point. I want to make this point actually. I'll make it at the end. What has been done? We took about 6 months to just work out the integration process. We took that resolution of cabinet of 1999 because of the files, the Department of Labor said we're not going to inherit this mess. Even now, as you see, Dr. Kisnasamy is still at 2011, 2012, trying to get audited because we work from behind and so on and so on. Nobody wanted to touch that. So what has been done in terms of when they refused, we had the workshop starting in November. In May, we had a summit that included other countries and mine workers from around the country and came with recommendation of integration. Lawyers were put in place to be able to do that. They made proposals that were stalled at the Department of Labor, regrettable, because we did hand over the reports. So from there, there's nothing we could do. The clean break comes as a result of that delay. To say, in the absence of this going forward, this is the best. We try to find, expedite the way of dealing with the integration of compensation. That is how we try to expedite it. Even now, the widows and other dependents do claim. If the spouse died, the other remaining one can claim, etc., etc. About the opt-out provision, I think that one is best part of the class action. the lawyers can be able to deal with it. Dr. Berry, I don't know if there's anything you want to add there.
Chair, if I may? Okay. So, firstly, just to quickly demonstrate the query. So that's the form that we're handing out, and you'll then get access to this database. So, Andre?
Thank you, Chair, and Dr. Berry. So as you can see, it's listed on the website under the Department of Health. Anybody that completes that form that we give access to can access it. It allows you to search for ex-mine worker on any number of fields. So there you can see, you can either go on his industry number, his ID number, his passport number, first name or surnames, etc. If I want to look for someone, let's for example say on the ID number, I'll go to ID number, I'll put in a number or part of a number there, and if I search for it, you'll see this one, it says it's found two records, so it brings it up for you. It says here that this individual has got two outstanding claims, and it's a little bit difficult to see, but this claim status and the BME status, and both are red, which means that it's got, the red means that the claim is unpaid, and it's also due for a new benefit medical examination. If this was green, it would have meant that it's already been paid, and it's not due for a new benefit medical examination.
So, Chair, we suggest that you start with your family members, because that's the easiest. You know them, search for them, and then let us know so that we can pay. So I'm going to quickly swap over to the services in terms of the honourable members' issues. The process of a short-term, medium-term, and long-term is going to take us some time to pull that together. So in the meantime, what we've done is we worked on three pillars for the reforms. The first pillar was the issue about reforms to service delivery, so that the point you made was quite correct, that mine workers or ex-mine workers are dying or they've moved on. So the first issue was, as Deputy Minister pointed out, was the service delivery. And that we started way back in 2014. We opened Carltonville, Amtata and Carltonville. Burgersfort we opened a month ago, and Kuruman will be opened in next week on Tuesday. We've opened 10 one-stop service centers, and I've got photographs in your slides. There's Amtata. Mafeteng was opened in January this year in Lesotho, funded by the Global Fund. So we've got 10 of these units that are in neighboring countries. Two in Lesotho, two in Mozambique, two in Swaziland, one in Botswana, one in Zimbabwe, one in Malawi, one in Zambia, etc. So these are things that we've started building on the point you're making is, what do we do in the meantime while we're reforming and things? We are actually providing decentralized services. Historically, workers had to come to Johannesburg to actually get these services. Here we are. And there's Burgersfort at the bottom. Sorry, it's a bit this thing. You might be able to pick it up on your slide 23, which shows you the opening and 1,500 guests that came. Deputy Minister was there together with my minister in terms of the opening of Burgersfort and the celebrations. But fixed facilities are but one part of the process. People still have to travel long distances. So the fixed facilities are going to be decentralized hubs, administratively, etc., that support us. But we went one step further to mobile services. So this is Matatiel, where 20% of people came through Quokka's Neck, and we didn't turn them away because they worked with us, and we wanted them from Lesotho. And that was Matatiel in up here. We had 1,000 people, 3,000 people we saw in that week. And then here's the computer that you just demonstrated, where we could look up under the tree whether you've got a claim or no claim immediately in terms of that. And we made a breakthrough in terms of getting the Teba record of service free of charge. Teba was charging our people 90 rands. And through the IMC process, which Deputy Minister is part of, led by Minister Adebe, they made a decision October last year to take Teba to court and directed me to seek state attorney's advice. I went to Mr. Lesufi and said, I'm going to take Teba to court. Do you want to help? And they said, well, they'll pay for the record of service. So the Chamber of Mines is now paying, so our people don't have to pay for records of service. So that's what we can look up. Banking services. There, I know APSA may not be the most favored name around Parliament, but I'm just joking. But the issue is that the banking association has come to the party. So we've taken banking services to our people. So it's a one-stop service. In Masat, APSA was there with us. UBank was with us, etc., etc. Tomorrow we meet most of the banking services. So that our people don't have to go with the forms to have to travel from the village and then ask for fee cutting. We open up the bank account on-site, so that we can immediately pay as we take things forward. This is Swaziland. So we just didn't only look at South Africa, we provided that. So these are services that we're talking about right now. While we're looking at the reforms, we're actually providing services right now for people in terms of the process. Malawi, I mean, I discovered, 3,000 people, 800 in one village process, and this thing. So it's migrant labor has had a major effect on Southern Africa, And that's why we differentiate, there's a table here which tells you how we're paying South Africans and non-South Africans in terms of the process. So I hope to help you with the fact that service delivery. On the people of beneficiaries, mine workers who have died, unfortunately the mine worker has died and is not in our system. Unfortunately, that's a moral problem. That's something that we'll have to discuss in terms of morality and whether the industry will come to the morality issue. Because if you're not in the database and you don't have a system, then I don't have a way of saying you've got silicosis or a TB or whatever it is. Remember, the silicosis and TB class action is covering you to have had a prior record. So there might be some dynamics that we need to discuss. I'm not too sure if Mr. Van Fieden or anybody has considered this aspect of it, but that's a moral issue. But the technical issue is that if you're in the system, then the beneficiaries will get paid even if you have died. So there are many people that we have here. The key area comes in around the fact that because of migrant labor, people might have had a family in Carltonville and a family in Amzumkulu, a family in Rustenburg and a family in Shashai. So we've got to work through these issues about who are the beneficiaries and how do we pay them, etc. And it's an equal split of the money. If there's 100,000, five beneficiaries, everybody gets 20,000 each, etc. So these are some of the issues we work at. And hopefully, Chairperson, you do know that the class action is a supplementary amount to the amounts that we pay. So we don't know the actual ratio, but there'll be additional monies that will come through the supplementary process in terms of silicosis and TB in terms of the process. So thanks for allowing me that.
Okay. As a member of parliament, I want to ask a very direct question without prejudicing any or either of the parties. Richard Spoor and your team. No, can't say sorry now. Very late. Babu Kool, the gold working group, and those that are not part of the class action. I want, when I come out of here, when someone asks me the question, I can just, you nearly answered the question, if I to put it crudely, or you say, if I put it to you, what is it that is in dispute that has taken you to court? No, we don't want the merits. If I sit here, you just say it's part of what you have as a dispute in court, it will be additional to what they are doing. That's my first question, that is direct. What is the... We don't want who did wrong, who did right, who won the case, who did not. What is the dispute? Is it... Because you raise an issue about the moral question and so forth. There are issues of responsibility, there are issues of liability, which is completely different. What is this dispute that is in court? If you can just share with us and say, the dispute that you have with the class action, it's about this and that, and what. Now, is the dispute about the amount, or is the dispute a contestation on liability or none? It's going to help us. Three, so that when I answer, when I get out of this meeting, at least I've got clarity. Because one will assume the question of trying to redress and therefore in a matter of in bringing in some human dignity and so forth. I'm just saying, what is it? Surely it may not be a dispute of law whether someone did not comply and so forth. Could be the point that you are raising. So that to come to the point that the DM was talking about, which I'm not going to answer now, it can only be this committee can make an informed decision on the basis of understanding the issue. So that is the first two questions. What is it? The third leg of this thing, as we are sitting here, so that we can. You, I think, both lawyers, group of lawyers, I would say four of you as lawyers, you made mention of the fact that this doesn't take away the fact that even if you were to reach a settlement, that individual would not be able to take up the matter on their own, separately from. So even if you agree, I just want to deal with that, even if you agree, okay, now let's put this thing to rest. Here is an agreement, we settle, we go to court, and the matter is dealt with. I can still wake up and say, no, all of them, they were not representing me. I'm now taking the matter again on my own. What does that mean or suggest? The first question that I would put directly again, the point I think to some degree the Deputy Minister tried to address. What guarantees do we have? Because we are in Parliament. And I raised this thing last week. I know you may not feel comfortable with it, but we have a duty to raise it. You know, people are warned every day, there's a pyramid scheme, be careful. Then they go there. What was this? The last thing was the triple M. You couldn't convince them. They will eat you alive. Then when the money goes, they say, hey, this government is a disaster, is a failure, our money is, and so forth. Now, I'm raising this thing in light of what you proposed. What guarantees or checks and balances that are there on the compensation in the event you deliver what you are fighting for your clients? For instance, you propose the trust, which we may not know how that trust is going to be formulated. And I can guarantee you when those monies don't come out of that trust, they may not necessarily be with the people that are represented. I'm not questioning your moral authority. I'm just saying, from where you are sitting, from the Parliament point of view, where you are sitting, what guarantees do we have that whatever is going to come, it will be in the best interest of those that you are fighting the case? Fifth one, said, and again a direct question, it may be interrelated. How are you going to deal with the question of determination of compensation? I heard someone was saying 0 to 10 and then whatever, blah, 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 blah. How is this compensation going to be dealt with? Babu Papash, the last question. I've got no reason to question your credentials, so I'll never do that. But I'll have to ask this question. If you are, you see, I said when you sit here, I know you count hours. You can phone me when I didn't ask you to call me, and then you bill me for the call you made to me. When I didn't ask you for a call, and then you bill and tell me how much time, how much the cost it is. If you then said, because you said here in Parliament, in the committee, that you have no financial interest, that you will, it's like, it's a human gesture. You said, what did you call this thing?
Contingency fee.
Contingency
fee, yeah. It means you're not paid now, you paid if you're successful.
No. He said they are community lawyers. No. I don't want to say community activists, but they are more like lawyers who do it out of the love of the communities, of what they are deprived. No, he knows the language he used. He's gonna say it. But I'm just saying, he's not doing it. So that, no, we must know. I want to know. So if, for instance, like the DM has said, we must sit here. If you say, which is why I'm saying the compensation format is also important. If you say, now if we get 12 billion rands, I'm making an example, we'll get 15% of that, we must know so that we make a determination, and we must know how are you going to get that, because in some cases when you look on the road accident fund, with due respect, sorry for the lawyers, I know they will say I'm bad. Sometimes they themselves, when they receive the money, they then go and invest the money so that it can accumulate some interest and then pay it 10 years or so later. So I think it's important because we have to ask these questions so that we can say this is what you said to us. what is the percentage interest in the event you get what you are fighting for? So I thought I must ask those questions. Eh? Including you. Yeah, I'm saying all of them. Except that I didn't know you were a lawyer. Okay. Okay. So I'm just dealing with that first part. Can you? That's why I said all of you. But the only person that I know talked about the activist lawyer was Mabukul. But we want to know what is it? What is in it for you?
Good. Okay. May I just shoot before they attend to the other? So there are questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the honourable members and the minister, the deputy minister himself. I can see him today because last time he ran away before I did our presentation. Look, what is happening here is. I started by saying, in pursuing these cases, we had to get assistance. The Makaza case, the open toilet case, I told you that we were assisted by the legal aid. In other words, the fees of running that case were paid for by the legal aid. And I said, I had a gentleman here from Ireland, and I said, he supported the case which involves the class action, even though the stance that was taken was that of a Georgia, not World War, which means we started the negotiations with the mining companies. And we also, extended the same gesture to the state to say, can we deal with this question? You know, I'm sitting here, before I attend to this specific question, I've just been informed that there is a database. We have a database. Now, I think this thing is actually getting settled very easily. And if this database was there 6 years ago when we started the matter, our people would have been paid. And the cost that we have incurred in securing them, and if not necessarily all in securing, but in registering them and finding out all their details, particulars which are required in order to get them paid, would not have been costly as it has. So in this case, what is happening with the discussion that were happening, or that is taking place with the mining companies or the working group, is that we are saying to the working group, the cost which has been incurred should be paid by the working group, in other words, by the mining companies, not the ex-miners themselves. When it comes to the state compensation, we've never called for any payment. All that we've been saying is that we have this individual, we've already put together the case for this individual, just pay the individual. And it has happened where we've never claimed any money, including the cost of putting together when we were pursuing the UIF cases. We incurred a huge amount of cost paying advocates, literally litigating on the matter in the UIF case. People are receiving money. We've never charged anything. And we said we will not charge. That is our contribution to this social problem. We've never charged them. Now, in the case where we have put together, for instance, the database, I know the state says they call it database, we figured our individuals. We will have to discuss with them, look, this is the cost that we've incurred in putting together this database, in making sure that these people are FICA compliant. We can discuss the fee, which in terms of the statute, there is a fee of 3% that is normally given to someone who has put together a work of that nature. And I don't think really we will have a difficulty in assessing that 3% when it comes to dealing with the state, or a figure which is reasonable, which is taking care of the account, that we have done this at no fee at all. We've used our material, We've used our time and we've used money. I mean, as we've said, I mean, these people are far-flung. They are in all remote areas. They are not in urban areas. Even if they are in urban areas, I mean, he was just indicating here how the shortage of having these facilities in all the areas. So it's the same thing. We've incurred the cost in terms of going to the areas. We've incurred the cost in terms of putting together the material for the database that we have to maintain. We are communicating with these people. So we will be amenable to say, from what we've put together to the state, let's talk about a percentage which is reasonable. But I think the statute is very clear in this regard. So that is on the question of cost to the state. With the class action or the negotiations that we are having, the cost will be paid and will be agreed upon with the working group, but the payment should be coming from the mining companies, not from the individual concerned. And another thing, the money does not come to us. The money will be going directly, the compensation will be going directly to the FICAT, someone with a bank account who is an ex-miner who is claiming on behalf of the ex-miner. We don't touch people's money. So it's not a legal aid scenario that we've been referring to when it comes to the arrangement that we are trying to put together. There's no agreement yet, but that is, those are our proposals to the working group.
The first question, why is this?
Well, I mean, if dealing with the two scenarios, and I just attend to that, dealing with the two scenarios where we are acting for the ex-miners against the Department of Health, for instance. We don't have a dispute other than that the Department of Health just has to open the doors so that we say these are the people that you are representing and this is the material we have to prove that they work in these controlled mines. There is no dispute in that regard. With regards to the class action, it was always about liability. And now we're in negotiation process.
Okay,
let's
so you consist of that one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Just for the sake of clarity, the firm for which I work, which is Four Attorneys, Abrams, Kivitz, and the Legal Resources Center, we are the attorneys who have been appointed by the High Court to represent the class as certified by the High Court. What is in dispute in that case is there's two stages to the litigation. In terms of the law as it is developed in our country of class actions, the first hurdle we have to get over is to convince the court that the class action is the appropriate way of pursuing these claims. That is the judgment which we got in May last year, in which the High Court said yes, it is the appropriate way to pursue these claims. But that judgment, as I think was presented in a briefing last week, is under appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. So if a settlement is not reached, that appeal will go ahead, and whatever the outcome of that process will be separate. The second stage of the litigation, if we then proceed with the class action, it will be the court to determine for us to prove that the mining industry is liable for causing silicosis and TB in mine workers underground. It's a standard delictual claim. And then the second part, once if we prove liability, we will then have to prove the damages, which is the monetary amounts owing to the mine workers. In terms of the second question you asked, it relates to a question from another honourable member in relation to opting out. So the honourable chairperson, you are correct in that this settlement, if it is achieved and if it is reached, the opportunity will be given to all members of the class who will be affected by the settlement to opt out, which means that they will exclude themselves from the settlement, which means they will not be entitled to any benefits in terms of the settlement, and are then therefore at liberty to institute their own individual actions against the companies for which they worked. That obviously comes with its own associated risks, and the whole reason for the class action mechanism is that people living in far-flung areas and beyond our borders, the difficulties that they have in accessing justice, they will be covered by the settlement automatically, unless obviously they opt out. The third question, in terms of the guarantees that and checks and balances that this trust, if the settlement is achieved, that the trust will actually pay out. When trustees are appointed, they owe a fiduciary duty to the trust and to the beneficiaries of the trust. And that is a very established, well-established principle in our law, and there will be checks and balances. There are checks and balances within the law, but also within the trust, which say that any trustee which acts beyond or not in the interest of the beneficiaries, measures, steps can be taken against him to remove them as a trustee. In addition to that, as lawyers representing the class, we are duty-bound to ensure that this trust will carry out its objects and that monies and compensation will be paid where it is due. In terms of the following question, determining the amount of compensation, that is obviously the subject of our confidential negotiations. But again, I'll stress that as lawyers representing the class, we are duty-bound and ethically we are obliged to ensure that the best settlement possible is reached for these four, all the members of the class. And I'll leave it at that. And then finally, the question of fees. Again, look, this litigation has been very expensive. We wouldn't have got to this stage unless we had the support of foreign law firms. And further, in terms of our contingency fee agreements at Richard's Four Attorneys provide that the percentage of any award made to a client will be 15%. Now, just to bear in mind that in terms of the legislation, the maximum an attorney can charge is 25%, and our fee is significantly less than that. But the second point I'd like to make is that any settlement agreement will contain a provision for the lawyer's fees to cover their costs. We will have to get this settlement, as I say, approved in court, and the court will not certify any settlement which it does not deem just, and that will include the component for the attorney's fees. Sorry, Mr. Chaplin, just one last issue which was raised by another honourable member a little bit earlier, relating to the workers have died and the widows of the surviving widows of those workers. In terms of the class, as has been certified by the court, it includes the dependents of mine workers who have died as a result of silicosis and TB. And so consideration has been given to those dependents, and they will be covered in the settlement trust. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gina just spoke to the point that I wanted to make, but on the... Apologies, I am Khomotso Malubati, working for Sibanyiso Walter, part of the working group. But the one point that I'd just like to make on the issue of guarantees that Georgina just responded to is just to say, I mean, before we even get to making sure that the trustees act within their fiduciary duties, I mean, that is why, you know, the settlement would need to go through to the courts to make sure that it is ratified so that any implementation is actually practical for the trustees actually to be able to implement. So that would be sort of the first step to make sure that it is workable. Thank you.
So, Chair,
I noted you.
Chair, so maybe not everything has been covered. I don't know. So in terms of the issue around the benefits, we have a benefit table at the moment in Odumwa, which is called first degree and second degree and loss of earnings for TB. So those are the only three categories that we have. In our discussions with both parties, we are given to understand there might be four categories. So we have And loss of earnings for TB is not covered by this class action as far as I'm concerned, because there was no loss of earnings and therefore there was no loss to the individual. So, and I think Charles Abrams pointed out last week that it was only the issue around TB, where it's a disability that's existing, and the disability part comes in from the assessment that we do. So I'm given to understand, subject to, because we are not privileged to any of the discussions. These have been roundtable discussions, that there may be four categories. Now, the problem we have, Che, in our law, there's a category of people for first degree payment. You have to have a lung function abnormality when you perform Mula Gakul, you blow into this machine. You have to have a greater than 10% and less than 40% lung function abnormality. And that's a category one of first degree. And we pay up to a sum of 45,000 rands. The second degree is above 40%, or it's diseases like mesothelioma, which is the cancer from asbestos, you know, or silico TB, where you've got TB and silicosis. So those become automatically second degree type stuff, where we pay up to 105,000 rands. So these are then the two categories. Unfortunately, in the 0 to 10% category, you could have a problem on your lungs, but you don't meet the criteria in the Act which says that you are compensable. So I'm differentiating a concept called, you've got an occupational lung disease, but it is not compensable. So that's the 0 to 10% category. So when I raised the issue around the 0 to 10% category, we've raised with both groupings, the employer lawyers and the class action lawyers, and I think they've come to the party to say that they might cover, and we don't know the details, about they'll cover this grouping of people in that 0 to 10% category. But they might want to answer that, or they may not want to answer that. But I'm given to understand that there might be an understanding of this grouping where you've got a problem, but it is not compensable in terms of a DIMWA. Okay, so I hope I've clarified that. So that's the first category. So we'll call it category zero. First degree, where we say you've got a first degree problem, and I've given you the definitional criteria, then we'll generate a certificate which then goes to the class action settlement fund, and they will then pay whatever ratio or whatever it is they want in terms of supplementary amount. So that's the second discussion we had with them. Second degree above 40% or the disease category, there'll be a supplementary amount paid by the settlement lawyers in terms of the process. So that's where we are in terms of category 0, category 1, category 2 at this moment in time in draft guesstimates. Then there's a special category where there might be some special circumstances. It's in medical aid terms, it's called ex gratia payments, where there's a special appeal panel which says because of certain circumstances we should pay more money. So the settlement fund is setting up that kind of panel. They might rely on us as government, or they might set it up to say this is an appeals committee which says that we've covered category 0, 1, and 2, but in a special circumstance, we might pay additional monies. So that's where we are in terms of the discussions around this benefit package vis-a-vis my fund, done by the Department of Health, and the settlement fund. So that's where this ideas came in. Then to Honorable Mr. Barnabas Kuru, the issue around the 3%, I'm not too sure where he's picked up the 3%. This is the legislative, this is my act. It's very small there. I'll read out section 124. And unfortunately, so unless I'm clarified about where the 3% comes from in terms of Odimwa, but it might be in another part of government, what this reads is that any person who commits an offence, 124.1c, in exchange for services rendered in respect of assistance in claiming any benefit in terms of this act, Odimwa, charges a fee or claims remuneration from a person who is claiming such benefit in terms of this act, which is in excess of 0.5% of the benefit awarded to such person or any amount stipulated by the Director General. Now, unless there's an amendment to or a regulation that's coming subsequent to this. So, firstly, the problem is this is not a charge on the state. The 0.5%, up to 0.5%, is a charge on the claimant. So if I've paid the claimant 100,000 and an intermediary was working on behalf of the claimant to...
A lawyer.
Okay, there are a lawyer was working on behalf of the claimant. The lawyer can charge in terms of this act up to 0.5%. If it's in excess of 0.5%, then I, as the state, could take action against that lawyer for charging in excess of this amount, unless there's a... Because the problems I've had with this act is that there were regulations. So unless this is changed and I can be shown the 3%, this would be in conflict of this law. But it is not a charge on the state. This is a charge on the claim. Social justice is a problem here.
Yes, and then Honorable Schmidt.
Hello. Chair, I think we should really, as the committee and as government, not lose this battle of leaving it out there, because we've had experiences. Earlier on, I raised the matter of the richest poor asbestos relief trust, where the Premier of the Northern Cape had to go to the High Court to try and get the trustees to do their work and to get an additional trustee from the area to deal with the matter. Because what trustees do, not only this and others, win the action, put a trust together, they take their 15%, gone. They've done their work. Those trustees, those fiduciary duties and so on and so on, I have not seen it in action. I've seen frustrations, lawyers, doctors making money, and people die, those whose name the money came. That's what I've seen. So that's why we say, let's make a case study so that we don't repeat the same mistakes. We had a meeting with those trustees to try and correct some of these issues, but unfortunately those processes were scuttled by another lawyer who was claiming to be representing those people, who wanted the trust to pay money into his account. So this can become a scam, and the people who we talked about don't get anything. So I just want us to know that. And lastly, you see, the reason why we took a decision to say, listen, let's take Teba to court as government. Because also they were saying, before you get your record of service, you must pay me a certain fee, 90 rand, and so on and so on. So anyway, at that point, the Chamber of Mines came in, and the matter is settled. I insist that the database for mine workers in this instance belong to the state. And I'm sure our lawyer there may discuss whether 3% or 0.3, whatever the settlement is, and who pays for all the services. But that's why these people are sometimes held to ransom, because everybody's holding records of the poor worker. You see? And they can't get access because they don't have the 90 rands. Also, people, intermediaries are not only lawyers. There are others as well who have been really exploiting the vulnerability of these workers. That's why sometimes we feel so strongly about it, Comrade Chair. So I'm going to park it here on the basis that the insistence is that the database belongs to the state, not to anybody else. But lastly, just because I'm closing now, I'm not going to come back unless there is a question directed to me. To give you an example as to how the app works and how the information is reliable, when we went to Friday, Monday, with the Minister of Labour, where if we go to an area, we're able to tell them within a radius of 50 kilometers, we've got 2,462 people registered on the database. And within Friday, it's 1,600. Out of the 1,600, 784 have done, completed their BMEs, and already 105 people are paid, and they are paid 11.5 million. That's how the details you get to people, etc., etc. So, 2 weeks ago we were in Pampistas, there were 1,000 people here in Freyhead, there were over 4,000 people weekday in Pampistas. You are invited, Chair, maybe with your committee, to accompany the Deputy President to Kuruma to open the last one, next week Tuesday. You see? And the numbers might be just be more. So I'm just saying to you, there is so much hunger from these people who worked in the mines before to just get what is due to them. And the good thing is that the money is there. But you know what, when we met with the Financial Services Board and the fund managers, they are not going to give easily. The more they keep these funds in their books, the better. They get interest, they invest here, there, and there. In the amendment of the law, my amendment would be that anybody who's got unpaid benefits must hold it for a maximum of 2 years. After that, they must relinquish it to some sovereign fund of some sort. Otherwise, we don't, this program is not going to end. And I'm just giving a warning here to those who think they want to open up some fund, start. It's not going to be as easy as it is now. Mr. Smith, I know that you want to get into that one, but be warned. Thank you very much.
No, I'm the one who will say you will not come back. You don't close and say you won't come back. I'm the one who says you can just switch off the mic. Honorable Smith?
So the last word is yours, sir.
No, I'm in charge.
I see.
Honorable and Mafolo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just ask, there's been a question someone asked me. The time limit or the time span average from once, I think you had that little triangle upside down from where it basically becomes active when people start sending in their documents until they get paid. Just a rough indication. Then I did pick up either in the documents or in the presentation last week that, and it's more about, maybe I should start the other way around. I understand Quetta and I understand Odimwa. And I understand there's funds available, like the Deputy Minister said. The money is looking for the people, people are not looking for the money, so there's money. So the process is to ensure that people who are entitled to money get the money. In addition to that, we have the class action. So we are basically faced with two different scenarios, am I correct? The one is the Odimwa, the Quetta, those issues which Dr. Barry, sorry, I know the last part is Sammy, but... is responsible and is dealing with. But there's a total new set of circumstances, and that is the class action matter. So if I understand correctly, the claim, the class action is there to ensure that the mines, in addition to what's in Dimwa Quetta, pay to a fund which is to be established and managed by trustees. We don't know what the amount of that fund is because it's still, I would guess, subject, or what it will be because it's still subject to discussions. Am I correct so far? Now, I also picked up, there's of course a difference between silicosis and TB. Now, silicosis seems to be an issue which the working group, if I understand correctly, does not, there is not much of an issue in terms of payments of silicosis as a principle. I do pick up a bit of a drawback in terms of TB. I'm not sure why. It had to do with the 6 months period where they're only entitled to this 6 months maximum payment for loss of earnings. Now, but my concern is, and I've read in a document called Waste and Wealth, drawn up by an institution at Cape Town University, Mineral Law in Africa, and it says the following. It says, miners working in South Africa's gold mines have the highest TB in the world. The rate of TB infection among miners is between 3,000 and 7,000 per 100,000 population, between 4 and 7 times higher than the general population of South Africa, the country with the highest TB rates in the world. That's by a study by this organization, UCT. But my question is, and it seems to me that there's not an automatic flow development from silicosis to TB. These are the facts which I've read. It's 3 to 7 times higher in mines than in the general population. But how does one... how is one going to prove, I would guess, if you've been in the mine for 40 years, that you can say, well, I've transferred from silicosis, I've now also got TB, because they don't flow automatically. TB is due to congested circumstances, to a variety of issues which I don't quite understand. So how is the working group and Spur Attorney, for instance, working around TB, which not necessarily flows from mining circumstances, but flows from other factors, maybe at home, maybe the highly infectious coughing of someone next to you, sitting next to you, I pick up TB at home, not in the mine. So how does one deal with that issue? I don't know whether there's something I've totally missed, but maybe I've got something incorrect there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. DM, when you opened the briefing, you said that there are ex-mine workers association, but I don't hear any the lawyers or department talking about them. Where do they fit on this whole issue? Thank you.
Okay, so the timeline for documents was this system had collapsed 30 years ago. So we have a chart where we, as DM has pointed out, we put out a two-weekly notification of payments, etc., and we can make that available to this committee as well, because it's a very important monitoring tool. So we started monitoring the actual payment from the time we see somebody to the time they get compensated in terms of money in the bank, and this is a tracking tool we have. It was originally as 40% of our claims was before the year 2000. So can you imagine the backlog of 40% of the claims being from before the year 2000? So we've narrowed it down from around 5 years, we're now down to 3 years. But that's in terms of the legacy problem that our Deputy Minister has talked about, of the 200,000 files and sorting out 100,000 unpaid, etc. That's legacy. In terms of the new process, we worked with Treasury and DPME about a tool that we're looking at 3 months. Month one, assessment. Month two, certification. And if you have a compensable claim, month three, payment. So that's what we are tracking now. We are tracking these two systems alongside each other. But we do apologize, and this is the problem that we've had about a collapsed system. And how do you actually resource it so that we can actually fast-track this? It's also linked to bank accounts that are kept open, because under regulations, the banks close accounts within a certain period of time. That's a discussion we're having tomorrow about keeping the accounts open in terms of this process. So I hope that helped you for that. And then in terms of, I think, going forward on the TB issues. So again, there's the issue, Chair, about morality. I mean, we've pushed a strong agenda on TB in mining together with my minister and myself. We now have a major program led by the Chamber of Mines. Unfortunately, the Vice President is not here, Mr. Andila, from Anglo-American. He leads an entire team at his level. Dr. Balfour is behind you, the chair. So there's a technical team that's dealing with TB in mining. And that was taken up in June of 2015, directly as a call from my minister because of the rates and this thing. So the biological issues is that silica dust and TB go hand in hand. If you're exposed to silica dust exposure, you at three times the risk of getting TB. If you're HIV positive, you're six times at risk of getting TB. If you're HIV positive and silica dust exposed, 18 times the risk of getting TB. So hence the problems that you faced in the statistics that you're given. So we're tackling it up with gusto. The industry has come to the party, and we are now reaching out beyond screening programs to contact tracing and a range of stuff. We can make available that report via Mr. Lusufi's office, because there's a comprehensive report that can come to this committee. Dr. Ndelu is part of that from the Department of Mineral Resources. In fact, they get regular reports through their reporting standards as well, and maybe they could talk to that at a meeting next year. But jointly, Department of Mineral Resources, Department of Health, Chamber of Mines, is tackling very much. The problem has been small and medium enterprises in mining, and how do you deal with TB? So so the issues on the technicality of the class action and TB is a different matter altogether. And I think technicality is different from morality. That's why we said, and Chairperson summarized it very well, morality, liability, and I think you gave a third point to it, responsibility. I think those are lovely words. So I think those are some of the discussions maybe in your summing up about how do we come with a history of an industry that built South Africa, and how do we apportion, without passing blame, no blame, how do we go forward in terms of a better future for workers in general, mine workers in particular, given the 3 points that you made. So on a technical issue, loss of earnings is not covered by the class action. That's the point. I mean, you can fight it, but it's a technical issue. So liability only accrues in terms of the disability assessment, and that's, I think, but the lawyers can talk to that, and they might want to talk to that. Morality is a different issue. Responsibility, I think the industry is tackling responsibility. One of the key areas was dust levels. I pushed as long back as 2009 for a dust level to be reduced in this country, occupational exposure limit. Department of Mineral Resources should talk to that about reducing the occupational exposure limit. It's an aspirational target. I'm pushing from a health perspective that we need to be much more forceful about occupational exposure limits. If you invite me next year, we'll give you some examples of occupational exposure limits for a range of things. And I don't think we've been decisive enough in South Africa. As I pointed out, an OEL in Australia is 0.5, an OEL in South Africa is 0.1, 0.05 in Australia, 0.1. So the industry says, I'll manage 0.05 in Australia, and I'll manage to 0.1 in South Africa. And we're saying that's not acceptable, given our other issues. Okay. Thanks. Sorry, on governance, It might be that the committee might want to pronounce that and one can make a submission to court, which definitely from the Department of Health will be making, is the possibility that any new governance model should involve the state. So that could be something that we could do.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Aubrey van Veer, and I'm representing Harmony and the working group. And I'm neither a doctor nor a lawyer. I'm a minor, born and bred.
Not youth.
But thanks for the compliment. I think I want to answer the questions simple, because albeit that this is a very complicated issue, for us to deal with it as minors, we had to make it very simple. So the first thing is, the working group, I think, and that's what Graham presented to you last week, has got three legs. To address this issue for us as an industry, we had to fix the legislation. That's the way we saw it. We had to do something with this backlog of people that were due compensation, but it wasn't under our control, but we've contributed the levies over the years. And then the third one was we had the lawyers on our back with class action. So in simple terms, to fix the litigation, and the mystery of the litigation is that those same people that Dr. Barry refers to as the 400,000 are already covered by COIDA for everything else. So the mine workers, all mine workers in the private sector in South Africa is covered by COIDA. However, this group of people that for occupational lung disease, there's six diseases, are under DMWA. And that's why, so the integration of compensation is actually simple if you think of it. It's just put the 400,000 with the 14 million as a first step. And I think that's the way that we see the future go, or the clean break principle. The second point is the whole issue, there's already two classes, TB and silicosis. That is in the judgment, etc., and it will be dealt with accordingly in terms of our negotiations in settling. And I think what we have to acknowledge as a working group, again, is the role that the Department of Mineral Affairs have played in putting us together, the DM. We understood that, you know, as miners we have this problem. And specifically led the integration of compensation process. Then also the fact that the support and the collaboration between all stakeholders, because you can imagine how many people, unions, lawyers, mining companies, with shareholders, are all involved in this process. So it's been quite a collaborative process. And I think, again, just in simple terms, if we look at what we've been trying to do is to assist with the strategy of the commissioner in terms of how to fast-track claims. And I just want to quote a simple figure, two simple figures. Over the past, since we've started this process, almost 40,000 certifications has been done of ex-miners and current miners, which is actually quite remarkable. The other thing is that almost 13,000 employees and ex-employees were paid R500 million in compensation. It's actually 550 million is the latest figure. Am I correct, sir? So it's actually... And why I'm quoting that is that's what happens if we can all collaborate. And yes, we haven't shaken hands yet with the lawyers, but hopefully we'll get close to that. And I mean, obviously once that is, or we are close to it, but once we can announce something, we'll announce what we've agreed to.
Have I covered it?
Thanks, Chair. Okay, DM, before maybe, let me complicate matters for you so that when you respond, you respond. The first issue is that I don't want you, Babukolu and Perry, to to start with invoices in the meeting, because you start to dispute and they have invoices. Now I don't need an invoice. No, wait. The issue here, I want to put it, the issue here is that first we are trying to find an amicable way of managing these issues, and I think we need to have clarity. But also we need to safeguard the interest of the vulnerable. That's the duty, the task, and the responsibility that we have. Now, before the reason I'm saying I want to come before the DM can make an input is that quite clearly there are some areas that will require interventions from a government point of view. That includes looking at the legislative framework. For an example, you talked about non-controlled and controlled mines. Now, I sit here and say, hey, is that a voluntary system? Or is it something that it's supposed to be a responsibility that the state makes it compulsory? The second thing are the issues that Dr. Katinsame talked about, the reduction of dust levels and so forth. Quite clearly, it's an issue that we have to look at. But I'm just saying now we've got a privilege that the deputy minister is here. There are issues that are being raised. I don't want us to go to the details. Some of those issues include the fact that there could be potential and a possible duplication of tasks. So we can't give it to anybody else. I was going to suggest that with all these issues that were raised, without the deputy minister interfering with the legal processes that are underway. But there are issues. I can't agree with you more, DM, on the question of... please understand me. I'm not questioning your credentials. But we can't sit here and pretend that we have not seen these things taking place where people, some of them, they've been... It depends on the nature of the trust accounts. That's what I don't want to reduce it when it's class action. Trust accounts have proven to some degrees to be problematic. We can count many of them that we know. Others, they would have been millions, maybe 400 million rands in the accounts. And then the next thing we are told, no, they are left with 600,000 rands. And no one takes responsibility to what happens there. Then people, what do? They look to the state and say, but you never protected us. Now, I wanted to suggest to them that can we give this task to your office? That with all these, including the point that Honorable Mafola was talking about, the affected parties, that will include maybe reconciling health, through the compensation commissioner together with Ulu and partners to see what is it that can be a common ground. And then receive a report probably by March next year. We should look also to one credible, what do you call this thing? One credible database system that probably will be in. How you handle it, it's a political responsibility. Secondly, deal with the question. I'm getting convinced day by day. That's why I said I take nothing from you. I'm getting convinced day by day when I'm sitting here that as long as the state and those that are making financial contributions, whether by compulsion, as long as they are not part and parcel of decision making on the distribution, then we'll have a problem. So part of that task is for the DM to say, how do we look at the state protecting those interests? Amongst other things, I'll make an example. If there is going to be an established trust account, legally or whatever that we may be considered, When you look at these royalties and other things that are being paid, I can tell you we're in KZN. It was shocking. People, when they fight, then you ask the mining companies, what happened? They say, no, we are not part of the trust account. But people are dying, they are fighting over the money. Now, I'm saying part of that consideration will be that, shouldn't we consider that, I'm not saying it's possible now legally, consider the state as well as those affected mining companies. For instance, if that working group can have one or two people in that trust account, so will be the state, so that the distribution is not done on the basis of goodwill. It's done on the basis of responsibility that is there. I'm not saying it is possible. I'm just saying part of that work. Then if we can ask the Deputy Minister to then come back probably in March, give us then a report on the issue of that exercise. If it happens that the class action has been resolved, surely we can't instruct you what to do. You know, you will see how you handle the matter. We'll only get a progress report when we come back. You can then invite, like we did now, all the affected parties, put them under one roof, deal first with the issues of dispute and finding a solution without facilitating, obviously, what they are dealing with, what they might be dealing with, but to just bracket what could happen possibly in the near future. Then I think we must agree that we can take this. Part of that will be, again, another progress report on the one compensation system. The point that the compensation, what is it? I nearly said you're a compensation commissioner, see now. I'm giving you a bigger title. But the point that Dr. Perry supposed you was talking about is, it's a compensation commission. Oh,
under the Department of Health.
Under
the commissioner. No, that's why you are giving the DM, because he's raising an issue that there might be a theft, health and labor and so forth. To say when we come back, maybe as a neutral, objective person who is the affected party in this case, you can be able to give us a progress report how far it has been gone. The point that DM also, we might need that information that you raised to say, I don't think we must take it lightly. We'll say, put that into consideration, that when funds are kept, there has to be time periods instead of people seeing it for purposes of investment. So I think that matter, we must leave it to you and say, yes, I think we, as a committee, we will support that exercise. But I thought that I must put those things so that when you respond for the last time now, we can allow you.
Chair, thank you. That at least now the last word is mine on this one. I think let me just take a few, just to remind members. I just came across something that was given to by the parliamentary liaison officer here, that in 2006, on the 24th of August, Parliament was debating a subject about the 60th anniversary of the African mine workers' strike in 1946, the significance and role of working class movement in the transformation of our country. And this subject was led by then Member of Parliament G.G. Oliphant, I'm told, and Parliament took the following resolution. We'll hand it over to you. That the House notes that the 12th of August 2006 marks the 60th anniversary of the mine worker strike in 1946, further notes the important role played by the mine workers in the development of our country and the transformation of our economy, believes that the demands put forward by the African Mine Workers Union in 1946 were not fully addressed and are still relevant today, and resolves that A, that the living and working conditions of mine workers be investigated further and improved. B, to support the initiative by the National Union of Mine Workers to build a workers' museum. And three, or C, that Parliament gives consideration to naming some of its buildings after J.B. Marx, a leader of the African Mine Workers Union, and other heroes of struggle. I'm just putting it for the record. But now, when Abri was speaking, he was speaking as a miner, not a lawyer, not this and that and the other. I speak as an ex-mine worker, as a lawmaker, as a regulator, and somebody was given this mandate fully by the presidency on this matter that you just endorsed, Chair, that we must go forward. The political responsibility to lead this program was given to the Deputy Minister of Mineral Resources, by the Minister of Health, the Minister of Labour, Minister of Mineral Resources, and the presidency under the Deputy President. So it's not something that we just grabbed. And that's why I said earlier then, next week I will be reporting back to the presidency when we hand over the last pilot. And the anchor for this has been that compensation commissioner that you're talking there, in terms of strategy, mobilizing resources, etc. If it were not because of the Gold Working Group, the Chamber of Mines, we wouldn't be here where we are, because they were able to fund a lot of the issues there where we are and still continues to do so. The point I'm making, Chair, in this one is that the state made zilch contribution in this program. We tried even to get the interest on the monies from the Department of Finance, Treasury. They said it was not legally permissible. The presidency wrote a letter to all departments to say, this program is so important, you must support it with funds. It has been a battle. So, in March, you will be passing budgets. Remember this. Okay? That this thing needs funds to go forward. It might not be directly from you, the committee, but from the system itself. And the system is broader than what we are here for. So having said that, we must also recognize that as we speak, the accident fatalities in the mining industry have gone beyond what it was last year. So we're not getting better there. We've got more people died than last year in the mining industry. It's a matter that we call the CEOs of mines. We met about a month ago, and there's a system by the Mine Health and Safety Council to try and go back to zero harm and so on. So that is I'm flagging this. This matter that we're talking about of occupational hygiene and all that, injuries and diseases, it's bigger than us. It's huge. As we continue now, this thing is not getting better. I just got a note now from the acting inspector, chief inspector of mines, that they are going to reduce the exposure levels to the line, to the international standards, and that the Mine Health and Safety Council is dealing with this matter. We want also to report back when you come in March, because in your presentation you're proposing that there are certain things that must be done by the end of March, including having joint portfolio committees. So let's target the date in March that you will advise us, but to do all these things, including what you're saying, Chair, the legislative framework that we must do, and it can be done, the issue of controlled and uncontrolled mines, the dust levels, the integration process, and maybe try and see if there are negotiations between the parties, Mr. Kulu and others, to be able to deal with the database issue. But also the question of the trustees and the trust accounts that you say we must deal with. We are going to try and deal with those things. But Mr. Schmidt is not here. He raised a very important point about the TB rates in the world versus South Africa. We are very high. We are the highest here on the continent. But within the BRICS in the world, that's where you find the highest TB incidence. So if we try to find a proper program that has got proper protocols to deal with this matter. And I think the heads of states are going to be discussing this matter. Because the most deaths in the country is this thing, TB. Kills more than anything else. HIV, AIDS, Ebola, and so on. This is the killer, TB. So we need to find a way of dealing with it. Lastly, Comrade Mafolo, the associations were formed precisely because of people being unorganized. We found them. When we came, some of them were formed across the SADC also in South Africa, and we are encouraging them. Because the successful programs that we had across the country, we had to get ex-mine workers to group themselves in association. So that's what we are encouraging going forward. But also we are telling them, regrettably they are volunteering, they are not getting a cent for it. But we want a system that can be able to empower them. Because at some point the National Union of Mine Workers agreed that they will help them with transport, with administration, but that never happened. So we've got something to deal with as well there, but that's the better. But lastly, the system collapsed because it was geared for white workers, mine workers before. When there was this type of getting the black workers into this thing, the system collapsed totally. That's what we're trying to, Dr. Kisnasam, the commissioner, and those stakeholders we are trying to get. But to me, this system, we must clean it up, hand it over, so that it might be under the court. It's going to outlaw us. The state must take control of this thing. And we must end this exploitation of the vulnerable by those who are powerful, who take the lion's share when it comes to this matter. And the question of the trust, that's what we'll deal with, and we'll engage robustly and, you know, as constructively as possible, so that we get some outcome. Dr. Nicole, I'm going to be working with you. You can't just give me work in this committee and you sit back as a researcher. Start working and give me what I have to do. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. I'm sure you will then exchange your numbers, and then fortunately the DM is here, the DG is here. We will send you the notification of the meeting where we will be getting a progress report in all these issues. Thank you very much. It's a complex matter. Whilst we are dealing with the leakers, on the other side, we are looking forward on the future, which is going to take time to deal with it. But hopefully we will be up to the task. Quite quickly, honorable members, can we go to the minutes of the 22nd? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. I must check whether they are still alive. Any mover? Any mover of the... There's only one member here who has got an advantage than all of us. That's why he's keeping quiet. Honorable Jafta is sitting on health and then mineral resources. So this thing is boring to him because he gets it that side and then come here still, we're talking about the same thing. Any mover? Maybe he shouldn't move because he may even not be... think that he was present in the meeting when this thing was dealt with in health in a wrong meeting. Any mover? Or a beginning?
Thank you very much. I move that we accept these minutes as the full reflection of that meeting of the 22 November 2017.
Any seconder?
Second chairperson.
Okay.
Any
matters arising?
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. No, thank you very much.
No, Chairman, I thought that we have dealt with most of matter arising, because this meeting was a follow-up of this particular meeting, and therefore we have dealt with a lot of matter arising, Chair. So, and I think we have been able to resolve a lot of matters, a lot of issues. So there is also a way forward from the resolved part that we could not have that particular meeting, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, if there is no matters arising, you are all released. Hopefully we'll see some of you next year. Keep well, keep safe, and happy festive season. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you want access. Let's talk, because I think this is now towards really.